welcome you all to the courtroom, but a special welcome to Port Washington High School students. Would they please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. The students are here with a program, a national award-winning program. The program is sponsored by the Supreme Court and the State Bar of Wisconsin. We invite students from around the state to come and join us for an oral argument. If the students accept the invitation, they're sent materials about this case. They may engage in some activities relating to this case. They come to oral argument, and a justice of the court is assigned to meet with the students after the second case for a discussion about the processes and procedures of the court in taking cases and deciding cases. There is no discussion of the substantive issues of the two cases that we have heard. We invite anyone who wishes to join the students. So the discussion is not limited to the students, and that includes counsel. I may join them. If anyone would like a summary of the case we are about to hear, if you'd raise your right hand, the marshal will give you a summary. Good. Thank you. It's easier to listen to the oral argument if you know something about the facts and the legal issues that are involved. Let me introduce the court to you all. On the far left is Justice Michael Gableman. Seated next to him is Justice Pat Robinsack. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Crooks. Justice Crooks is the justice with whom the students will meet today. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. To her right is an empty chair. Ordinarily, Justice David Prosser sits there. Justice David Prosser is not participating in any of the December cases. And on the far right is Justice Annette Ziegler. With those introductions made, I will call our first case for today, and that's 10-AP-2398, Lauren B. Zweifelhofer, thank you, versus Town of Cooks Valley. Representing for the Town of Cooks Valley is Attorney Joe Thrasher. Mr. Thrasher.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, I am Joe Thrasher, counsel for the appellants. At the outset, I would like to stand corrected on something that was in our reply brief. Contrary to what I thought, this town does have a master plan. It is available on the internet. It consists of a detailed history, extensive demographics. Whether the last page really amounts to a plan, I will leave to the reader, but it is there, and my apologies for missing it. Now,
and what's the significance of that?
Only that I missed it.
Okay. Well,
and I don't want to leave a misstatement in a brief uncorrected.
Okay.
Now, right. I think there's an importance to this case that has been somewhat under the radar, and that is the interrelationship between county and town governments. When I speak of town today, I'm talking about towns where the populace has adopted village powers. And so town and village is synonymous with one exception, the statute requiring or permitting county veto of zoning applies only to towns, not villages.
Okay.
Otherwise, they're interchangeable. Normally, a county board does not have veto power over the actions of a town board. The town, as a village, has home rule power under the Home Rule Amendment and Section 60.62 of the statutes, which are quite extensive powers to act in the public good, and specifically enumerated is the power to license and enforce various activities. There is and normally the county has no veto over that. There's an exception with zoning. If the county has zoning in effect, then it has a veto power over town zoning. And I think the reason for that is pretty obvious, to avoid a hodgepodge of conflicting zoning laws within the county, which is a perfectly good reason and understandable. On the other hand, when we interpret what is a zoning ordinance, I think it's important not to go beyond what is necessary to protect that county interest and to preserve the home rule rights granted to the town by the Constitution, the Home Rule Amendment, and 60.62. So we get into drawing some lines. Now, we know from the case law that there can be overlap between zoning ordinances and regulatory ordinances, which could be done either way. One of the amici has suggested that that is true only where there is other enabling legislation permitting the non-zoning ordinance, which nonetheless deals somewhat with land use. That is true of some cases, I think most notably this court's decision in Wood against City of Madison, where while the city undertook something that looked and tasted and smelled and sounded like zoning, it wasn't done under zoning, but it was authorized under the platting statutes, Chapter 236. So the amicus is right to that extent. Some of the cases do depend on separate enabling legislation, but not all. And I think the most notable exception is probably Village of Wind Point against Halverson, where this court upheld the village's power to enact a building code not under any separate enabling legislation, but just under the police powers of the Home Rule Amendment and 60.62. Building codes do, to some extent, regulate the use of land. Now, I won't say that that's the same as a non-metallic mining ordinance, but the significance of the case is even absent separate enabling legislation, there can be overlap between what it can be done by zoning and what can be done by other ways.
Mr. Thrasher.
Yes, Your Honor.
I want to question you about what you just said. Given the fact that there can be an overlap, how do we really apply any test to determine whether or not it's an exercise of zoning power or an exercise of regulation or police power, if you will? Is there a test that works given an overlap situation?
I'm going to propose one, and I don't think that just saying this is a an extensive regulation enough. The term that was used was pervasive interference with land rights. I think that's pretty amorphous and doesn't solve any problems. I propose a somewhat different analysis that's intended to balance the interest of the county in not having multiple zoning and the rights of towns to manage their own affairs. And basically, I propose a three-step analysis. First, let's look at the characteristics of typical zoning. What are they typically? Secondly, what is the purpose behind zoning anyway? And then thirdly, let's take the ordinance in question and compare it to those first two, and how many points of similarity and how many points of difference are there? What are the characteristics of zoning? I've identified, I think, three. They're related, obviously, and people could phrase it differently. But first, with zoning, we are told what land use is permitted in an identifiable geographic area, and thus, by definition, what is prohibited, which is basically everything else. That is a characteristic of almost every zoning ordinance one will ever see. Secondly, as this court stated in David Ulrich against Sockville, zoning looks to the future. It is a present determination of what land uses will be permitted where in the future. Typically, at the time of enactment, nobody's even proposed them. It is a planning tool. It is definitely a land use planning tool. And if 5 or 10 or 20 years down the way, somebody proposes a use in a district where it's a permitted use, it's virtually a done deal. They may need a building or sanitary permit and must comply with building codes, but they don't need anyone's permission to do it. No further hearings are necessary. If you want to build a house in an R1 district, you can do it. So it's been planned in advance. And the third characteristic, maybe overly simplistic, but the one over which most ink has been spilled in this case, is zoning typically has zones. I don't think we have to decide, can there be a single zone district, or what is a floating zone, if there is such a thing, because I'm willing to assume that that can be the case in any given area. Nonetheless, I think we have to concede that in way over 99.9% of the cases, zoning ordinances create zones. And if looking for the line that Justice Crooks has inquired about in doing that, if we look to these rare exceptions, I think we're letting the tail wag the dog in our analysis. So zoning has zones. Those are the characteristics of it that I see. What is the purpose behind zoning? I could not hope to put it better than did counsel for the League of Wisconsin Municipalities at page 14 of their brief. The separation of incompatible land use classes is the central purpose of zoning. I think that hits it right on the head. And if we combine that with the characteristic that it's done in advance as part of advanced planning, I think we have just an absolutely classic definition of what zoning is all about.
Counsel, you make reference to page 14 of the League of Municipalities brief. They also have a three-part approach. Tell me how theirs differs from yours and why yours is better than theirs. Their three-part approach is a test should have these elements. Number one, whether the regulation creates zoning districts. Sounds a little bit like one of your prongs. Number two, whether the regulation is a pervasive restriction on land use. And number three, whether it directly or indirectly separates incompatible land use classes. Those are their three. How does that relate to your three, and why, and assuming there are differences, if there are differences, why is your three-prong approach better?
Oh, they're quite close, except I don't put as much emphasis on the subjective term pervasiveness as I do on looking at the characteristics and purpose of zoning and comparing it to a given ordinance. I'm not suggesting that pervasiveness isn't going to factor in. It's probably going to factor in primarily when we get to the second stage of the purpose behind zoning. And I think that's where we're going to find it. But they're similar, but I will say I don't put quite as much emphasis on the subjectivity of pervasive as lining the question ordinance up with the characteristics and purpose of zoning and seeing how many points of comparison and how many points of difference there are. But we're close.
Well, is this pervasive? Is this mining ordinance pervasive? Depending on pervasive.
As to mining.
Pardon me?
As to mining, certainly. As to anything else, it doesn't touch it. And when one considers the broad spectrum of land use, I would say singling out one single activity is not pervasive at all in the total scheme of things.
So you view pervasive meaning, is it a pervasive regulation governing land use, that is pervasive on land use?
Yes, across the spectrum of land use.
And that this only covers one use?
That is correct.
Okay.
Now, when we take this particular ordinance and...
You could do that as a characteristic and add a fourth, couldn't you, to yours?
Yes. Yes, I don't claim that my focus is the only way it can be phrased by any means, but my real point is I think we need an analytical framework to look at this problem, not just say, well, are you regulating land pervasively, because opinions can differ so much in what that means.
Well, when I look through these, and it seemed to me some of the cases tried to do it in the one sentence. And when I looked at all of the briefs and I looked at the non-party briefs, it would seem to me that you might need a whole series of criterion and then decide which were the criteria that fit zoning rather than a single definition, and then which of the criteria that didn't fit zoning. And then your next step would be to say, how does mining, this mining,
right,
non-metallic mining ordinance fit?
Right.
Okay.
I agree. And I grant you maybe the three steps I've talked about as characteristics are a little short, but even using those, if we compare the present ordinance, we get the idea of the analytical framework I'm proposing. First, a characteristic is zoning tells you what's permitted where and what's prohibited where. This ordinance does not do that at all. It absolutely prohibits nothing. It may or may not be used in the future to deny a license application. We don't know that until the time comes, but it prohibits nothing. If a license is issued to Blackacre for a gravel pit on the North 40, or an 80-acre parcel, and only the North 40 is used, as far as this ordinance is concerned, the owner can use the South 40 for anything in the world, whether it's compatible or not. There may be other ordinances or laws coming into effect, but this ordinance says nothing about prohibited uses. Secondly, this ordinance is not a tool for future planning. It does not speak to the future. It is invoked only when someone applies it. They define the land, not the ordinance. They say where they want the gravel pit or the sand pit. And then and only then are criteria applied to determine whether it's a proper use or whether certain conditions should be placed on that use. But it's not an advanced determination as zoning is. And finally, obviously,
let me just ask you a question about that. I think if I were doing this list, I might put in whether regulation has safety issues. That is, whether the regulation governs safety. Because that doesn't sound like zoning to me.
That doesn't sound like zoning. Groundwater protection doesn't sound like zoning to me.
Well, but is that where's that criteria in yours? Where would you put that in?
Well, in the purpose of zoning, when we get to comparing this
okay.
with the purpose.
All right.
The purpose of zoning, of course, as we've been through, is to separate incompatible land uses. And in the future, it's a planning tool. Now, this ordinance has one point of similarity, I suppose, in that it can, in any given case, be used to absolutely deny a license to mine. If somebody's foolish enough to apply within a couple hundred yards of a convalescent center, I assume it will be denied. But the thrust of the ordinance isn't to vote an application up or down. The thrust of it is to determine whether certain precautions should be taken when the mining takes place. Is there a groundwater issue? If so, how do we deal with it? In the summertime, are neighbors going to have to keep their windows shut because of the dust, or can we somehow deal with it? In the evening, must neighbors or people down the road on the truck hauling route, are they going to be able to sit out in the yard in the evening without having these huge trucks rumbling by on the town road 100 yards away? I.e. hours of operation. Those may or may not be necessary in a given case. They're all regulatory, though, and they don't sound like zoning. And here's the big one, the really major consideration for small municipalities, which are always struggling with budgets, is Is there a way for the operator to set aside monies for road repair so the local property owners don't have to pay through their taxes the excess wear and tear on the highways that these trucks generate? One only has to Google 12-yard dump truck to find that that's the one typically used, weighing in at 34 tons when fully loaded. That's hard on roads. This ordinance would allow a mechanism to deal with that. That doesn't sound a bit like zoning. So I think if we follow this kind of analytical framework, not necessarily everyone I've listed, the court has already added some, I think, but it's the analytical framework I'm looking at. I think that is far, far better than simply saying, is this pervasive? And it is more focused. It strikes a balance between the reason for county board zoning power or veto power in the first place and the right of townships to govern their own affairs. It preserves the spirit of the Home Rule Amendment of 60.62. I suggest that it comes down strongly on the police power side of that fuzzy line. I cannot propose a specific bright line. I don't think we ever will, but I do think that if we follow that kind of analysis, we will at least do better. And in this specific case, I believe following that kind of analysis does mandate reversal of the judgment below, and we respectfully urge the court to do just that.
You know, counsel, one of the larger questions that came to my mind while I was reading the briefs and preparing for this case is if this court were to accept Chapter 19, the non-metallic mining ordinance, as a legitimate exercise of the police regulatory powers of the township, the question that frankly came to my mind was, why would the town ever need any zoning ordinances? Why couldn't it simply prohibit? You say it's not a prohibition. I don't know if that's accurate to say. They certainly can't unless they go through the application process and comply with the whatever conditions. So I guess I would view it more as a prohibition until they get approval from the town. Why couldn't any kind of activity simply be regulated under the penumbra, if you will, of a police regulatory powers, and why would there be any need for the township to do any zoning?
That's going to depend on what that other regulation is, Your Honor. I will acknowledge that there comes
a point. Why? Because if it's all, and I won't interrupt you again, but why? If it's all going to be on a case-by-case basis, like we won't prohibit it outright, but we'll make you apply for whatever use you want to do, and we'll decide on a case-by-case basis. So please.
Well, that may be legitimate, depending on what regulation you're talking about. I will concede, however, that if you get enough things that resemble zoning, and if somebody tries to recreate what essentially is a zoning ordinance piecemeal by 10 different pieces of legislation, you may very well reach the point where if it waddles and quacks, it's a duck. I can only say this is not that case. Why do towns not have to zone? Why do counties even not have to zone? That's been a legislative decision. Whether we agree with it or not, it's permissive in both cases, except for shoreline zoning.
Mr. Thrasher, does the county zoning ordinance cover non-metallic mining?
My understanding, and please understand, I'm not general counsel for the town. I was foisted upon it by an insurance company. But my understanding is the county's ordinance deals primarily with reclamation. And if it had this kind of detail, the town never would have passed one in the first place.
Okay. How does the town regulate, if it does, septic tanks? Or wells. I mean, can I just go out and drill a well wherever the devil I want or put in a septic tank, or their governing procedures?
I believe that's a county issue. I can't say that categorically, but I think it is already. And I know wells are regulated by the state.
Mm-hmm. What I'm doing is grasping and groping for a regulatory matter that affects how land is used, right?
Yes. When we're talking about ordinances here today, we're by definition talking about something that to some extent regulates land use.
And regulates where land may be used. So there may be places where you can't put a septic tank, right?
There are, but I think that's state code.
Okay.
I really do.
So I'm trying to find one. I'm trying to help you
for
the moment.
Or would a town?
Yeah. Does the town regulate something that is a process that regulates the use of land, but you wouldn't call it zoning?
Well, this court permitted a building code in Wind Point against Halverson.
I know that one.
I don't know that this town has done that or why they would. The point is it's permissible where the Uniform Dwelling Code doesn't already apply a state law on a non-residential. It could. I don't think it has, but it could.
Might be something like building fires, which is regulating the use of your land. But yes, it wouldn't be in a zoning ordinance.
It would not be in a zoning ordinance. There's already a burning permit requirement out there, and it's got nothing to do with zoning. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to find an analogy, and then I'm going to see whether it really is close to you or it's not close to you.
Well, I think we hark back to that. What is the purpose of zoning? To separate incompatible land uses. And all of the examples you cited really have nothing to do with that.
No, but it does affect use of land.
It does. Right?
Zoning affects the use of land.
Yes.
Okay. And affects where. Maybe you can build a fire, umpteen hundred feet from a grove of trees, but not within X number of feet of trees.
It's a where, but it's more of a regulation of an activity to prevent that activity from taking place where it's dangerous to do it. And if that is considered land use regulation, so be it, but the land use is secondary to the hazard prevention. I think that if we limit zoning to the intentional separation of land uses deemed incompatible with each other, we don't then even have to think about these analogies. They clearly fall outside of it.
In your analysis, then, you could start, rather than having purpose as your second prong, as you did, you would start with purpose as your first prong, and your argument is it fails with regard to that prong.
Yeah, it could absolutely be switched around that way. No question.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Thrasher?
Thank you, Your Honor.
The red light's on. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal, counsel. William, is it Thiel? Counsel?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Bill Thiel, and I represent the respondent, the Zwiefelhofer et al. In this case. In preparing for my oral argument, I ran across another case that I think is of importance to direct to the attention of the court that hopefully will direct it to the proper method of approach to determining what is a zoning ordinance and what is not. The term that has been bandied about in our various briefs is that of comprehensiveness. And this court did hand down a decision in the case of State XREL American Oil Company v. Bessent, B-E-S-S-E-N-T, 27 with second 537, that provides a starting point.
27?
27 with second 537.
The date of that?
That decision, Your Honor, was 1965. And the quote that I wish to iterate to the court at this point in time is found at page 545, and it states, quote, "A comprehensive zoning plan, as distinguished from the regulation of a single business or a single type of business, more substantially rests upon the interdependency of adjoining parcels of land in a community and the appreciation that the value and usefulness of each parcel to the owner and to the community are affected by the use made of the adjoining parcel. Mr. Thrasher emphasized that his position is that zoning constitutes a situation in which you are separating, quote, incompatible land uses, end of quote. I would emphasize the fact that, as this quotation from your prior decision does, is to emphasize the interdependency of parcels of land and the interrelationship between uses found on the various parcels of land. And if I might, the statement of purpose to the ordinance that is before the court this morning at section 2.02 states, and I will quote in part, "The general intent of this subchapter is to regulate the location of nonmetallic mines." Obviously, there are other provisions provided, but...
Construction, installation, alteration, design, operation, and use.
Yes.
To protect the health of residents and transients.
That is
secure
correct.
Safety from disease and pestilence. Further the appropriate use and conservation of land and water resources. Preserve and promote the administration and enforcement of this subchapter.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor. In looking at the concept of comprehensiveness, I have come up with a number of criteria that I would invite the court to consider if it decides to make some type of an attempt at providing a line between a general police power ordinance.
Do you agree that we need criteria?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Do you agree that we need criteria?
I think that we're inviting that the court establish criteria because, as Mr. Thrasher and my briefs and the various amici briefs have pointed out, it is little understood as to where that dividing line is. Indeed, I'm wrestling right now on behalf of other clients with, are you adopting zoning or are you adopting a police power ordinance?
Well, it's always nice to have some agreement between opposing counsel. So we've got an agreement that criteria are in order to guide this case as well as the future cases.
Okay. And that is a point that I wish to emphasize because this is not about, quote, sand mining. Indeed, if I might, I've been practicing municipal law for 37 years now, or approximately that. And I was just running through my mind as to the various types of hot-button items that have come up from time to time. Today it's sand mining. Yesterday it was ethanol production. It was hard rock mining before that, livestock feedlots, turkey farming, trailer parks, big box stores, strip malls, topless bars, and adult bookstores. It seems
all for those days of yesteryear.
Ah, yes. It so happens that, and I do represent municipalities for the most part, in many situations they are in a reactive as opposed to a proactive position because there is no need to do anything when everything is copacetic. But when a new use is thrust upon an area, then the gears are put into motion to adopt something.
Before you continue, I have one other question, and that is, I've been reading in the newspaper about the legislature dealing with new mining laws. Does that affect this?
I don't believe so, except in the broader sense that if the state adopts environmental or other regulations regarding mining, it would be of a statewide concern as opposed to each municipality adopting its own police power or zoning ordinances to deal with what they perceive to be issues.
Okay. Sorry. Justice Bradley.
Thank you. Counsel, you are about to talk to us about characteristics of comprehensive, I think. But before you do that, I wanted to make sure that I understand your use of that quote from that 1965 case. And you were using it in contrast to the discussion of what purpose is. Purpose that was voiced in the League's brief and also by opposing counsel is the separation of incompatible land use is the central purpose of zoning. So that's why he was talking about the separation of use as purpose. Are you discussing purpose or are you discussing characteristics as you proceed with telling us what you're going to be doing this?
Well, I will be discussing characteristics of what I believe constitutes a zoning ordinance because under the circumstances, that is the line that hopefully this court will attempt to draw to provide guidance to practitioners, landowners, and municipalities in how to deal with issues that arise as to whether they fall in the realm of general police power, action under specific statutes such as 236-45 on subdivisions, or the Zoning Enabling Acts.
The definition of purpose that is set forth on page 14 of that brief cites to RAFCOPS, the Law of Zoning and Planning, as I understand it. Do you agree with this assertion that the separation of incompatible land use classes is the central purpose of zoning?
It is one of the functions of zoning. Indeed, zoning has gone through a great transformation through the years, Your Honor. We started out with the Euclidean zoning Amber versus City of Euclid, in which
I really want you to be able to get to this your discussion. I just want to understand the framework and the paradigm and whether or not you agree or disagree. You may disagree, but do you agree that the separation of incompatible land use classes is the central purpose of zoning? Do you agree with that statement?
I agree in part.
Pardon?
I agree in part.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. With regard to the concept of comprehensiveness, I've come up with a number of criteria that I might invite the court to consider relative to what is or is not a zoning ordinance. A zoning ordinance is one that is uniformly applied throughout a district as to all land that fits whose activity fits within a type as defined therein. It applies irrespective of who is the owner or occupant of land. As Mr. Thrasher pointed out very accurately, it controls the future use of land. It also promotes the public health, safety, and welfare. It regulates a business or land use activity based on location, not so as to assist in preventing a particular activity from becoming a nuisance. It conserves the value of property and encourages the most appropriate use of land. In addition, it regulates or restricts the erection, construction, reconstruction, alteration, or use of buildings, structures, or land. It applies directly to the use of land in more than an inconsequential or incidental manner in controlling, restricting, or regulating the use of land, structures, and buildings. It preserves property values. Now, Mr. Thrasher pointed out the case of Village of Wind Point v. Halverson, and I acknowledge that as being a sound and true decision of this court. However, there is a distinction between what was dealt with therein and in what I perceive to be a zoning ordinance as adopted by the town of Cooks Valley. In the Halverson case, this court decided it was not a zoning ordinance and then left on the table the issue that we are presenting to you today as to what is the line between a general police power ordinance and a zoning ordinance. But I commend to the court that it review that case to the effect that even though there was some degree of land use control in the ordinance, specifically establishing a setback for buildings, that was the only incident of land use control, and that was indeed incidental in relationship to the total scope of the ordinance.
Counselor, how does the Chapter 19 ordinance regulate the future use of property?
It regulates the future use of property because a person who owns land or occupies land, rents or leases it, who wishes to engage in a use of land, in this case non-metallic mineral mining, must approach the town board to obtain a conditional use permit. And the town board, under the authority of that chapter, has the right to either grant it without condition, grant it with condition, or deny it. It is truly applicable to the use of land.
But there's not a determination about the request made before the permit has ever been requested, correct? It's a determination that's made in the present. So you request a permit and then the town has to decide whether to grant it or not.
And indeed, in that respect, it fits within the confines of what has been categorized as a zoning ordinance, the effect that it controls the future use of land. Because before you engage in that use of land, you must approach the town for a permit.
Okay, but the determination about whether you can do it hasn't been made before the request was made, correct? Unless I misunderstand opposing counsel's definition, his definition of regulating the future use is the determination about whether you can do A or B with your property is made before you ever ask.
Yes.
Okay. And I think what he was saying is here, we don't know if we're going to let you put a gravel pit on your back 40. You apply, and then we'll decide whether you can do it or not. So there isn't a yes or no in advance.
I would argue to the contrary.
Okay, that's what I want you to address.
I believe that there has been a determination made, and that determination is that all land within the confines of the town of Cooks Valley is subject to the limitation that you cannot, in the future, engage in non-metallic mineral mining unless you approach the town board and obtain a permit. So, in effect, and going back to your recent decision on the town of Rhine versus Bazell, in which this court very astutely defined a conditional use as being an exception to the general concept of permitted uses, and that each zoning district must contain permitted uses upon which conditional uses may further be applied. Theoretically, there's another reason to argue, not before this court, that this is an invalid ordinance, because what the town has done is say, we're taking the issue of non-metallic mining. We are looking at it from the standpoint of regulation as a use of land, and we're making it a conditional use. So my position is that they have already determined that within the entire town of Cooks Valley, we are, in effect, limiting the use of land for non-metallic mining, and it requires that you come to us in the future to obtain a permit.
And they even call it a conditional use permit.
I'm sorry?
And it's even called a conditional use permit.
It is indeed, Chief Justice.
Which sounds like a zoning term.
Traditionally, it is used in zoning, yes.
Counselor, every time you get a permit, though, or that you have to apply for a permit to do something in a town or in the city of Madison, every time you apply for a permit, it's not necessarily zoning. If I want to add a sunroom on the back of my house, which I've tried to get my husband to do, but he's not interested, I have to get a building permit to do that. But that really, I couldn't do it without it. I would be breaking the law. But that isn't zoning.
No, it is not. Indeed, the differentiation is that your house presumably is located in a zoning district that permits either as a matter of right or conditionally, residential structures. It is the content of the residential structure in terms of plumbing, heating, air conditioning, et cetera, that's regulated by the building permit. As I indicated in my brief in extremely simplistic terms, general police power ordinance such as that regulates the how, not the where. And if I might, at this point, three of the cases that each of the parties to this lawsuit have brought to the attention of the court are David A. Ulrich, Adel Beck versus Town of Teresa, and Town of Clearfield v. Cushman. And I took the opportunity to go to the State Law Library and look up the ordinances underlying these cases, which are contained in the appendices to each of those cases. And first of all, the first case I cited is Ulrich v. Town of Saukville, 7 Wis. 2nd, 173, a 1958 decision. And this particular ordinance, and if you recall my discussion earlier about the hot button items that we've had periodically popping up, in the 1950s and 60s it was trailer camps. So each one of these particular cases decided by this court dealt with trailer camps. This court decided that this particular ordinance was not a zoning ordinance. It was adopted under the general police power. And if I might, the provisions in the ordinance that were construed by the court included the requirement that a permit be obtained, the premises be inspected, no more than one license per school district, no more than 10 trailers per trailer park, and then limitations on the size of trailers that would be placed there, fire protection and sanitary requirements as well. In Edelbeck v. Town of Teresa, 57 Wis. 2nd, 172, a 1972 decision, the trailer park ordinance was held to be zoning. And the criterion upon which this court determined it to be zoning was Section 3 of the ordinance, which stated, and I'm paraphrasing, it is unlawful to locate a mobile home on any street, alley, or highway in the town, or in any public place or tract of land without a permit. And you go to Section 4 and it says, town board may issue a permit for location of a mobile home outside of a mobile home park. Well, that's what we have in this case. We have the town board adopting an ordinance that says you cannot engage in non-metallic mining anywhere in the town unless you approach us for a permit.
You know what? I haven't read that case, but it seems to me that what you're trying, the town's trying to do is regulate the use of property for particular types of residential units, which might very well be in a zoning ordinance that trailer camps can be in this part of town and not in other parts of town. You can't have a trailer used as a home or business.
Mm-hmm.
That is just a little different than an activity is a commercial activity.
I would beg to differ respectfully.
I raise this as a question.
Yeah, my difference with Your Honor is that the scope of zoning involves any and all types of land use mm-hmm. activities. And you may have commercial, industrial,
sure.
residential, institutional, et cetera, other activities.
And say only industrial here.
Yes. Indeed, if I might, and I apologize for interrupting, I think that this brings into play as well, Your Honor, the concept of the cases of Town of Hobart versus Collier and several others to the effect that if you engage in enacting a zoning ordinance, I believe that Mr. Thrasher, simply for purposes of getting us into the issue of comprehensiveness, tacitly conceded the concept of a single district zoning ordinance being legal. You could, as a municipality, adopt a single district, and the only control on that, or it's a very major control, is that you cannot zone property so as to render it economically or otherwise useless. And that comes out in your decision of Kamiec, K-M-I-E-C, the town of Spider Lake. So beyond that, though, if the land within a municipality is compatible, or I should say is acceptable for use in a particular manner, such as industrial use alone or residential use alone, conceivably that entire jurisdiction could be in zone for one purpose.
Residence.
Yes, it could.
What's your third case? I interrupted you.
I apologize.
No, I interrupted you from giving it. Go ahead.
The third case is Town of Clearfield v. Cushman, 150 Wis. 2nd, 10, a 1988 decision. And like in the Ulbrich decision, this court determined that it was a general police power ordinance. And again, I looked at the ordinance as attached in an appendix to the briefs. And again, it's a trailer park ordinance, and it states that each mobile home must be 720 feet square or larger. Each mobile home is to be on a lot, 3 acres or larger. It must be connected to a sewer system and well. Footings are required, skirtings are required, and inspection of water, sewer, and foundation are required. It was held to be a general police power ordinance because it did not state you cannot put this trailer at this location or it shall be in location X within the municipality. So those are the three decisions that I believe are of importance, even though they deal with trailer parks, to allowing this court to come to a determination on what is and is not a zoning ordinance.
That last one, don't you think, sounds like the non-metallic mining ordinance?
Yes, it does.
And it was held, what, not zoning?
It was held not to be zoning. You're right, Your Honor. But under the circumstances, I don't believe that it went as far as this ordinance because it did not constitute a comprehensive restriction on the right to use land. The indication in the ordinance that you could only place a trailer home on a lot 3 acres or larger in size was incidental to the main purpose of the ordinance,
which
was to preserve the sanitary and healthful condition of the trailers for their occupants.
All right.
One of the comments made by your opposing counsel with regard to a standard previously employed dealing with pervasive use is that it's so subjective. What's pervasive to me isn't pervasive to you, perhaps. Doesn't your suggestion of comprehensive also fall subject to that criticism, that it's pretty subjective? What's comprehensive to me isn't comprehensive to you?
Well, until the state legislature provides the bright line, unfortunately, this court is placed in the position of potentially defining what is the distinction between the two types of regulations. And I know of nothing in the law that prevents a court such as this from establishing subjective standards. I think that rendering of a decision in which it comes up with criteria does render them to be objective. You know, for example, in another zoning case, this court in Zierwolkel v. Washington County Board of Adjustment did establish standards regarding what is a variance. And I must add candidly that for years practitioners were wrestling with that, and at least the rendering of the Zierwolkel decision has taken a huge issue or question off of the market, and thus people both building houses, restoring houses, and municipal officials have a better idea of how to apply the law. And I think that's the issue of how to apply the law.
For years, this court has been struggling with, believe it or not, how to define the practice of law. And that's a pretty challenging, it's been proven to be rather challenging. When I started preparing for this case, I thought of that, too, because it is such an overlap, and how to draw clear distinction is pretty challenging.
I believe that I agree with Your Honor. I might add that from my practice and application of the laws in this area, that this court has very resolutely declared that personal or individual rights in private property are sacrosanct. We have a constitutional and a common law right to do with our property as we see fit. However, it has then laid over that the concept that in deference to needs of the public, health, safety, and welfare, we may adopt police power regulations. The dividing line is, as I say, one regulates the how and the other regulates the where. And because of the deference of this court to private interests in property, and the understanding, I think, of that by the state legislature, we have devised specific enabling acts under Section 59.69, 60.61, and 62.23 to develop safeguards as to how and when a zoning or land use regulation is adopted. Whereas with a general police power enactment that may deal with nuisances or otherwise deal with somehow protecting people from conduct of others, all that you have to do is adopt an ordinary ordinance by the legislative body, and of course this court generally defers to the legislative wisdom of the legislative body in question.
Which underscores why it's so challenging, because you've identified the interests involved.
Yes.
And if we define zoning broadly, it tips the balance one to the other. We define it too narrowly, we have to come up with, I thought to myself, a Goldilocks approach. That is, we have to define it just right, not too broadly or not too narrowly, to maintain that delicate balance. That's
not,
the challenge.
Not too cold and not too hot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does the record show why the county did not approve this, or wasn't it submitted for approval?
It was submitted, and yes, it is in the record, Your Honor. The county took the position. Correct myself. The county took the position, as is evidenced in a letter that is attached to an exhibit in the record, that this ordinance was zoning, and hence, before this town were to place it into effect, the county administrator indicated to the town of Cooks Valley it needed to approach the county board and obtain its approval. So in the opinion of the county, it was zoning.
So that's their interpretation of
yes.
The statutes.
It was the county's interpretation, yes.
What characteristics did they use?
I'm sorry?
What characteristics did they use?
I believe, if I recall the letter correctly, the county administrator cited the fact that you are actually regulating the use of land. And in consequence, under 60.62, the county board has the, or you have the necessity of submitting to the county board for approval. And in response to an earlier question that you posed to Mr. Thrasher, Chippewa County does have zoning regulations regarding mining. I cannot stand here and tell you what they are, but mining is allowed either as a permitted use or a conditionally permitted use in certain zoning districts within the county.
Any of them cover this town?
No, because this town, as I believe Your Honor understands, the dichotomy that we have in local zoning such as this is that a county board adopts a zoning ordinance. It applies throughout the county if and when towns adopt. For example, in Eau Claire County, I believe there are 9 towns, and 6 of them have adopted county zoning. The framework is there, but until the towns adopt the zoning, it doesn't apply. And in the case of the town of Cooks Valley and Chippewa County, it, too, has never decided to pass a resolution to adopt county zoning, and therefore county zoning is ineffective in the town of Cooks Valley.
And is under the county plan, if the town adopted it, does any of the allowable mining areas coincide with this town?
Well, that's a very good question. What happens, as I believe the court is well aware, under zoning, whether it's at the town level, county level, city, or village level, you generally will establish districts. And the entire town could be available for mining. Certain restricted areas might be available, and others might not be it at all. But that is a part of the legislative decision-making process on implementing the legislative decrees.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Thank
Hearing
you.
None. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Thrasher.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, I do know there is a letter in the record attached as a deposition exhibit from the then county administrator, who I checked was not a member of the bar, voicing his opinion as to whether this was zoning. I don't think, though, that it was ever submitted to the county board. And the reason I don't think that is because if the town were treating it as zoning, it would have followed some different procedures in adoption of the ordinance. There are extra steps that are perfectly doable but aren't required if it's not zoning. I don't think the town ever treated it as zoning. I agree with counsel that if the legislature were to adopt a comprehensive statewide regulation of this type of mining, that would trump the Home Rule Amendment, and that would apply. That may be a consummation devoutly to be wished, but so far it simply hasn't happened. Thirdly, Mr. Thiel's criteria of comprehensiveness, I think all do appropriately apply to zoning. And if you put them all together in a package, I think they define comprehensive land use planning. This ordinance is not land use planning. In terms of is something zoning because no matter where in the municipality you want to do it, you need a permit first, I would wholeheartedly endorse the Chief Justice's comments about burning permits. Almost everywhere I know, outdoor burning outside of a container is not permitted unless you have a permit. That certainly doesn't make it zoning. And finally, I certainly hope that the verbiage that the drafter of this ordinance chose isn't going to be dispositive by calling this a conditional use permit. If it had been called a license, which is what I look at it as, that issue wouldn't exist. So for these reasons, we do respectfully urge that the judgment below be reversed. Thank you.
If that judgment is reversed, that means that anyone who wants to do non-metallic mining, unless they've been grandparented in, has to go for a permit.
That is correct. And
that's all that this does.
That is all that it does.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions, Mr. Thrasher? Okay, thank you. I want to thank both Attorneys Thrasher and Thiel
for really excellent arguments in what is a very difficult case of line drawing. Court draws many a line, and they're difficult to do. We think they're drawn straight, and we think they're drawn in concrete. After we draw them, we find out they're not quite straight and that they may be drawn in sand, which may be appropriate for this case. That ends our hearing on 10 AP 2398, Zwiefelhofer versus Town of Cooks Valley. The court will take a few moments of recess so that the Port Washington students may leave if they wish, and Ellsworth High School students will come in. We are in recess.